From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 23rd day of July, 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kirk Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group is not available today. In agricultural news, the Secretary of Ag says climate legislation on the Hill will marginally increase input costs on the farm, but those costs over time will be easily made up in the carbon market. Even so, the Office of the USDA Chief Economist expects that's not really the case. And the administrator of the EPA has until December the 1st to decide if it would like to increase the national ethanol blend rate from 10 to 15%. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. Also in this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau. And along the way, I'll talk to you a bit more about the acre sign-up process. Yesterday's press release from NASS announcing an August survey of corn in seven states and what the two have to do with each other. And then at the end of this half hour, meteorologist Mike Tenora will be with us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Pete Levitt's still traveling in China. That's actually good news for us because Mike helped develop a portion of the weather model Daryl Good used to come up with that national yield of 161.9 bushels per acre for corn. He'll tell us how some of it works. And it all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this for the nearby contract in the wheat, September at 531 3/4, up 9 3/4, December at 559, 10 cents higher, and the March at 577.5, up 9.5 cents. September corn at 327, 19 higher, December at 338 3/4, up 19.5. And the March at 352 1/4, up 19.5. May futures from the corn pit up 19 cents at 361.5. July at 370, up 18 3/4. August beans a nickel higher at 1023.5. The SEPs at 961.5, up 16.5. And November soybeans at 932, up 24. January 939 1/4, up 24 1/4. Bean meal up $2 at 323. Bean oil 15 cents higher at 34.67. August live cattle futures at $85.25, unchanged. October at $90.10, up 30 for the day. And the August feeders at $102.37.5, 75 cents lower. Lean hogs at $60.95, down $1.15. You are listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures finished the day with the September contract $1.76 higher at $67.16. Ethanol at $1.59.7, up 6.5 cents. Natural gas at $3.57.4, down 21.9. And the RBOB at $1.91.6, up 7.8. Heating oil, diesel fuel, $1.76.1, 5 cents higher on the day. And propane futures were just about 0.6 cents lower at 77 cents even. Gold at July contract at $954.50. The settlement price there up $1.50. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now at 9,076, 195 points higher. And the U.S. dollar at 78.80 is up 0.1 on the afternoon. The CRB index at 251.33 is 6.28 rather for the day. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like at this hour. It says tonight partly to mostly cloudy skies across Illinois and Indiana. Highs will range from 81 in eastern Indiana to near 90 in southwestern parts of Illinois. The extended temps say that it'll be cooler than average across Illinois and Indiana for the final week of July and by all indications into the first week of August. The cooler temperatures are slowing the development course of rates for area of crops, but also keep concerns about crop stress to a minimum. All areas are expected to see occasional rain over the next week to 10 days, but precip amounts will be lower in the northern areas. At the bottom of the hour, we'll hear from Mike Tenora with tstorm.net. He's here instead of Pete Levitt, who's traveling across China on this Thursday afternoon.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, Hudsonville, Illinois, and Crescent City, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On this Thursday afternoon, you are listening to Illinois Public Media. This is the Closing Market Report. On the line with us today is Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, filling in for Dan Zwicker this afternoon. How are you today, Kurt?
Doing good, Todd. Thank you.
You know what? I think it all started last night, just as we were about to get started with our Outlook panel in, Streeter, Illinois, last night with a LaSalle County stockman. We read a note from NASS that they were going to update the acreage figures for corn in seven states. And the overnight, of course, started a rally in the corn pit, and it continued on into today.
Yeah, some exciting news. I mean, you got to expect extremes, and we've are seeing the extremes. And some positive news for, say, ideas are they could lower acreage by half to 1 million acres, and you plug that in the supply-demand balance sheet and go from there. That would maybe take you take a million acres out. That would lower production by 153 million bushels using the current yield. But on the flip side of it, if they come in and raise yield a couple bushels to the acre, that would offset that. Also, too, though, the question in that survey, not only planted but harvested acres, and there's ideas that maybe they could lower planted acres and even come in and lower harvested acres yet. So what we did is add the momentum or some more uncertainty into the marketplace, and so the trade read that as a signal to add some premium back to the marketplace. The people in the know or concerned, they jumped on it last night and followed through during the day trade. Once we did move above 335 here in the day session, we generated some technical buying. There were some buy stops at 35, 36, and we got into those, shot us up, and we stayed above it. So with the market being oversold as it is, and the uncertainty in the marketplace, it appears now that maybe we can try to turn this trend sideways to higher here, Todd.
And you're convinced that's a possibility?
Over the near term, yeah. As a trader, I'd be a buyer here at the 35-30 area and see if we can't scoot on up to this 345-350 area. I don't foresee a big move to the upside due to the favorable conditions of the crop, unless the trade all of a sudden be concerns about the late maturity. I feel that won't be an issue until we get a little further down the road, but I think we're in a position to have some recovery. How much recovery, we're just going to have to monitor that day to day. Demand also picked up, good export sales, starting to see end users come forward a little bit to book some inventory.
Did overnight trade and today's trade change your range at all on what your expectation for corn is on cash prices in the near future?
Not particularly. We felt we could have some recoveries on the futures up to some areas just above the marketplace. Until we get into harvest and see where we are on actual yields, we still feel there's some downside risk. We view the fundamental news and the technical action here as an opportunity to see some recovery, to give producers an opportunity to make up some catch up sales and add to some new crop sales here if the market will cooperate here for the next week or two.
A bit later in the program, I'll go into more depth about what the NASS decision was and what that really means in August in the crop production report. I talked to Joe Persaki earlier today. Didn't record that, but I do have some numbers for you that we'll give to you. One of the things that Joe mentioned was in the press release, and he just said, we forgot to do it, was that in August, the crop production report, while it's updating the corn acreage, that August crop production report always updates the soybean acreage anyway, because USDA says, it's June 1st when we take the report. We know the beans aren't in the ground all across the nation. So those numbers will be updated. Do you think there'll be much change there?
I think there will be a change. We saw some areas shift a little heavier beans, and we saw some areas that did not get some beans in. We see some areas where they were going to go beans, but they went ahead and put corn in. So there was a lot of jockeying around and switching around. We're under the opinion that even bean acres might be down just a little bit from those higher expectations due that there was some prevent plant take place in some areas. So the August crop report is now going to be a huge report. It's going to be just the biggest report we've seen in some time in here as they sort of fine-tune these numbers.
And one other note, and I'll talk about this later too, I know, because I pre-recorded part of that. one other note is that Joe told us that because they do the objective reports in August, the first set of them, they will get an opportunity to see if there were any switches in states outside of the seven states they're discussing on corn. So that would be Iowa, Nebraska, Kansas, states like that, where they're not looking at corn numbers in particular. And that the objective reports are supposed to go into cornfields that were identified in the June acreage report. So they were supposed to be cornfields. If they get there and are not a soybean or a cornfield, then they'll be able to make some decisions on changes in that regard as well. So there's all kinds of things that make that August report a really, really big report. It's kind of been a report in the past where traders have looked at it and said, well, is it really right or not that we're so early in the month? We're so early in the season that they haven't believed it. But this time around, there's going to be an awful lot of information there.
Tons of information to digest, and it's going to create volatility and opportunity. But also, too, not to change the subject on you, Tom,
okay.
But you guys do a great job in following up on the Pro Farmer John Deere Crop Tour with Chip and those guys. Those guys do a great job, too, passing on visual observations that they acquired during that first part of August,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, we do that in part because we have Chip on Commodity Week after they get back. He does that for us, and it's really nice of him. I haven't checked with Dave to see if he's scheduled Chip yet, but I'm sure he's working on it. And then the National Association of Farm Broadcasting works with Chip Flory and the pros from Pro Farmer and usually John Deere, but I don't know whether they're the sponsor this year, to make sure that we get some numbers while they're on the road too. And so we'll have all of that. It'll be right here in the Closing Mark Report during that crop production tour. So those are some of the things you'll have to look forward to in the month of August. Any final word from you today?
Well, just a dynamic market, and the news is bullish, 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 bearish, bearish, bearish.
Right.
And I've talked to several guys who threw in the towel on ownership of some grain here on this break and sort of kicking themselves the rear end. But we sort of recommend if you do give up ownership, maybe replace it on paper. So when we do get these ups in here, you can play some catch up here, Todd.
Thanks so much.
Very good.
And that is Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, filling in this afternoon for Dan Zwicker, who unfortunately was in a pretty tough car accident. He's fine. Our understanding is, so we won't have to worry too much about Dan. We'll probably talk with him again next week, and our prayers go out to Dan and his family at this time.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Dave Dickey will be here in a moment. He'll have a full update of the agricultural news for the day.
In agricultural news, USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack told senators on Wednesday that climate legislation would marginally increase input costs for major crops, but economic benefits to agriculture from climate legislation and carbon markets will, in the long term, easily trump increased input costs. Vilsack told senators the bill would generate net returns to farmers of $1 billion to $2 billion a year through 2020 and almost $15 billion to $20 billion a year in 2040 to 2050. Meanwhile, USDA's Office of the Chief Economist yesterday released a preliminary analysis of the potential impact of climate change legislation on agriculture. According to the analysis, in the short term, net farm income will decline less than 1% between 2012 and 2018. In the long term, net farm income could decline about 7.2% under the legislation. Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Lisa Jackson told the Senate Agriculture Committee yesterday that she has until December 1st to decide whether to allow states to increase ethanol blend levels to 15% ethanol. Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Tom Harkin says the evidence has shown that EPA could raise the allowable blend level from 10% for most cars to 15% without affecting engines. Jackson says the EPA received thousands of comments and data on testing during the comment period. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
It's a Thursday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. Yesterday, the National Agricultural Statistics Service announced it would update the nation's corn acreage figure in the August crop production report. It'll do that in seven states. These include Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, Missouri, North Dakota, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. Growers in Illinois and Missouri will also be asked to update their reported acres planted to sorghum. Now, it's important here to note that the August crop production report always updates the soybean figure. That's why it wasn't mentioned in the press release from USDA. I spoke with Joe Persaki this morning to get some clarification. Here are the important parts. Well, the August crop production report surveys about 25,000 producers in all the states. This is much smaller than the more than 70,000 surveys made for June, but that's because it isn't looking for other crops like hay. And the results will be statistically reliable, says Persaki, who is the USDA NAS Director of Statistics Division. The objective yield studies are laid out in August, and those are the actual field counts. But the fields are identified back in the June acreage report. So outside of the seven states that are updated for corn, USDA may catch a few switches if they go to the identified field and it's not in corn, for instance. That's recorded. Now, how does that all relate to your acre decision? Well, a listener wrote us an email last night wanting to know if Darrell Good had an Illinois statewide average like he produced for the national average earlier in the week. I didn't ask Darrell that question, and there's a reason. The statewide averages will come from NAS, so it seems prudent to use it to plug into the acre decision. That would back things up a whole lot because the statewide average will be released with the August crop production report on the 12th, which is a Wednesday. That would give farmers 3 days, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, the 14th, to make an acre decision based on a USDA yield forecast. Now, I've made a couple of inquiries but have yet to get an answer back on whether or not it's possible to fill out the paperwork ahead of time and then just assign the contracts after August the 12th. I'm working on it. Here's the next point. Brother Tim and I spent a lot of time on the phone this morning talking about the program and how it works. Mostly I listened as he plugged in the numbers into the spreadsheet he downloaded from the FarmDoc website at www.farmdoc.uiuc.edu. Eventually, here's the way I decided to bottom line it for him, but not the way he bottom lined it. I asked him if they were going to fly on fungicide. He says the break-even cost would be about 14 bushels to the acre if you figure in the drying cost. So my question is this. Are you willing to spend $20 to $30 an acre to put a fungicide on, not knowing if it actually makes a yield difference? If so, are you also willing to spend about $6 an acre, the direct payment penalty, to ensure your revenue in years where things don't go so well? That's your decision to make. Here are some other points. Acre is a bit more like an easement or mineral rights. It's locked in with the farm, not with you. Put a farm in and it stays in, even if it's sold. Landowners might be wary about that one. On the paperwork related to income and not yield, if you're in the farm program already, it's exactly the same paperwork and no more invasive than what's already been filled out. That's, I suppose, a commentary on the acre program. You can take it for what it's worth.
So
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at stuart-peterson.com.
In today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkus takes up the topic of public and animal health interactions.
Legislative and regulatory attempts to restrict antibiotic use in food animal production are increasing, coupled with a host of other issues related to the links between food production and animal health. These efforts indicate increasing public awareness and concern with potential interactions of veterinary practices and human health. The use of pharmaceuticals for livestock is being held responsible for everything from early puberty to the prevalence of MRSA, that's a staph bacteria infection resistant to antibiotics. Advocates of current bills in Congress seeking to regulate antibiotic use in livestock cite the chance of interactions between drug use in livestock and human health as a reason enough to regulate. Despite a lack of evidence connecting the two, a sizable portion of the population has become convinced of the link. Certain diseases that have been proven to affect both human beings and animals, such as tuberculosis, have the potential to be passed from one species to another through either direct or indirect physical contact. For example, a farm employee who is exposed to TB might be able to pass this disease along to another human through the food animals he or she handles. The H1N1 flu virus is the latest example. Other diseases such as John's disease in cattle and Crohn's disease in humans appear similar, but no links have been scientifically proven. Nevertheless, as with the antibiotic-resistant argument, some people are ready to indict without evidence. Demand for most meat, milk, and egg products are weak enough to present without having to fight lingering product questions, real or imagined. If research reveals evidence those specific human-to-animal disease transmissions are possible, should regulations require farmers to support control possible disease transmission to humans? Farm Bureau recommends necessary United States Department of Agriculture funding to focus on the protection of our food, fiber, water supply, and critical industrial agriculture materials. Farm Bureau believes all farmers and agencies recognize the importance of adopting biosecurity measures. This is Amy Rochkus with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkus' comments are her own and reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, just give us a call. The number is 217-333-0850. In just about 2 minutes, I'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Mike Tenora of tstorm.net. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers. Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
It's National Vanilla Ice Cream Day. It's also St. Focus the Gardener Day, patron of farmers and gardeners. On this day in agricultural history in 1773, St. Thomas Brisbane was born. Brisbane conducted a number of experiments in growing Virginia tobacco, Georgia cotton, Brazilian coffee, and New Zealand flax. All were colossal failures. Brisbane was far better known for his study of the southern sky. In 1875, Isaac Singer died. An English inventor, he was best known for his continuous stitch sewing machine. By 1861, Singer was chief of the world's largest sewing machine manufacturing company. By the way, Singer spent millions of dollars on advertising, and he made purchases possible by offering installment credit. In 1876, Joseph Rogers Brown died. An American manufacturer, he invented a precision gear cutter that produced a universal milling machine. In 1903, the first Ford Model A was sold. It featured a twin-cylinder internal combustion engine designed by then little-known Michigan machinist Henry Ford. And in 1904, by some accounts, the ice cream cone was invented at the St. Louis World's Fair. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. Usually Pete Levitt is with us. He's traveling in China at this time. On hand this afternoon from T-Storm Weather, that's tstorm.net, is Mike Tenora. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for filling in today.
Hey, not a problem, Todd. Thanks for having me.
And Mike is a graduate of the University of Illinois. Not only is he a meteorologist, but he has a whole lot of ag econ background as well. We'll talk more about that a bit later. But Mike, maybe we ought to talk about this cold weather, or cool weather, I should say, that's been in the Midwest and affecting the corn and soybean production and the crops there. What do we see over the next 10 days?
Well, there's not a big pattern change on the way, so we'll generally see more of the same over the next 10 days. We've been locked into this pattern here now for the better part of 2 to 3 weeks, and there's really no change in sight. So while it will turn warmer occasionally, in general, we'll stay below average as far as those temperatures go. And the interesting thing about that is that it looks like there's a decent chance for both Illinois and Indiana to have the coolest July on record since records began in 1895. So we're talking about records that go back at least 114 years. That's how cool it has been for the state as a whole. And as far as rainfall goes, we have been a little bit above average, not by a huge amount, but it has been wet for the state. And it does look like we'll see a few thunderstorms here tomorrow night and into Saturday, beyond an isolated storm this afternoon and evening. But then as you get into next week turns rather interesting because as the cool air comes southward, it looks like humidity off to our south will try to overrun the Corn Belt, and that could set up a situation where we see widespread and potentially heavy rainfall across a big part of the Corn Belt, including Illinois. So that'll be something to watch for next week.
Now, I did mention that you had a lot of ag econ background. You had worked, in fact, with Darrell Good. You came through the university here. And last week, or actually earlier this week, Darrell had put into one of his newsletters a forecast for the national yield at 161.9 based on some weather models that AgEcon upstairs here in Mumford Hall works with. I think you were instrumental in developing those. Can you tell us how they work?
I certainly can. What Dr. Good was doing, it's basically a version of a model that I was working on for my thesis with him and Scott Irwin at the U of I. And basically what it does is it looks at temperatures and rainfall on a monthly scale across the key states of Illinois, Indiana, and Iowa, because those three states account for over 40% of U.S. corn and soybean production. So just by looking at those three states, you can get a decent idea of what's going to happen for the central U.S. as a whole. But then what you can do is you can take the monthly numbers, so say you were 1 inch wetter than average in July, and if you look back at history and compare that to corn and soybean yields, from that point, you can get an idea of whether, the crop that you're looking at is potentially going to be above trend or below trend. It does a good job in detecting the direction in which you're going to deviate from trend, but the precise number sometimes isn't always super accurate, so you have to kind of keep that in mind. But clearly, the trend has been to the higher side.
Okay, thanks so much, and thanks for the explanation, Mike, and for filling in this afternoon, too.
No problem, man. It's good to talk to you, so have a great day.
You too. Mike Tenora is with T-Storm Weather at tstorm.net. I'm Todd Gleason. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. You have a great afternoon.